다 제대 당나 근데 저라서 조부 조모 아바 아마 부 얘한테 내가 졸라 핀토고도 희발라로 봐 내발라로 봐서 그래 대세는 마방에 다 제 같은 거래
You should now sing
Gautama's song
called
Eight Gates of Basic Goodness. Basic Goodness.
And the reason why you should sing
is that
and your boyfriends and girlfriends and your children, none of the people you know will get sick.
Yeah.
And this is a song that keeps you out of practice in the face of sickness and death. And when you can practice this, then you can use it to help others too.
Yeah. Then you maba neda dejinani. Nata maba neda, nimo maba neda, donga maba neda zonde. So nele tembare, neba tola karchembore. Mana batoya na yungre, mana batoya nagre karchembore. Neba, neba la.
There are three verses in this song in particular. The verse about how sickness doesn't need to be shunned because it's basically good. And the kleshas don't need to be shunned because they're basically good. And suffering doesn't need to be shunned because it's basically good. These are particularly related to sickness, and they are important for sick people to practice because they're directly experiencing the sickness then. And they're also important for healthy people because healthy people will one day be sick, and they need to know what to do.
Then in the end, when they are so sick, they are not able to do anything.
If you can put these verses about sickness into practice, then sickness will not be a hindrance to you, it will be a friend. It will be a friend of your Dharma practice, a friend of your meditation. It will be a friend that helps you to attain enlightenment.
Sing a song.
Nam do du dum zu 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 Tintin Pamir Lingke Bindi Sironi Duna Vichikinsa Tumcho Tengkiru Lhasa Lhat Rukha Chisi Sama Pachinle Zambi Chisi Chisi Yinkinda Javi Yabdu Chachan Chisi Mave Singhi Dimi Lodi Lho Lohi Keta Lodha Nishi Sota Chisi Kisi Dukimi Yi Kanchi Keta Dukishi Tondha
All that's on Arkin to Tukba Temple Sanjuju, Tujibo Mundu Tondusum.
As before, please begin by giving rise to the motivation in the form of the Bodhicitta.
Anda, Nanjur, maybe Nibare. Nime Talon Jobane, Neo Jurba, Maba, Nime Yede, Numumba, Majuk de Miniba, Lamjuk de Miniba, and Yang in Debe Kazan. Dabi Jimmy Niba Dan Sanju Samji Chiba Dabi Jimmy Niba. Yeah, that is Ranga de Hija. Randy Hija Green. Netawa Long Dun.
Rinpoche has just quoted the section of the text dealing with the disadvantages and advantages, meaning the disadvantages that would apply if there were no transformation of the mind stream. And the advantages that apply if there is.
Just the disadvantages,
yeah. Mm. Yeah, the verse on the advantages is a separate verse. So, what we're dealing with here are the disadvantages, and those are... described in the root text as follows. And you'll find this on page 189. The introduction to disadvantages includes the four that would follow as a result. So, one might ask, is it possible that attaining enlightenment doesn't involve a transformation of the mind stream? but merely a cessation of all of the kleshas, karmic actions and suffering. And this text, this verse addresses that point. And it says that if there were no transformation, the fault would follow that there would be no basis for avoiding the recurrence of the kleshas or any other form of obscuration once it had been eliminated. And secondly, there would be the flaw that there would be no basis for speaking of entering a path. So there could be no progression along different levels of a path. Third, there would be the flaw, there being no basis of imputation for speaking of individuals attaining nirvana. And finally, no base of imputation for the distinctions that are made between the three kinds of enlightenment. So to look at the first of these, if there were no transformation, there would be no sure way of preventing a recurrence in the mind stream of afflictions already eliminated. And the example given in the text here is the obscurations eliminated through the path of seeing. If that, if the path of seeing did not comprise a transformation of the mind stream, then the obscurations that are eliminated through seeing could recur. In which case, one could fall back into samsara, because the path of seeing is another name for attaining enlightenment. It's the first bodhisattva level, the first step of enlightenment, the first degree of it. And if attaining enlightenment was not a transformation of the mind, then one could become unenlightened again. Later. But since it is a transformation of the mind, the basis for those obscurations that were eliminated by attaining enlightenment is gone. And since there's no more basis for those obscurations, they don't recur. And secondly, if there were no transformation, there would be no basis for speaking of entering a path. And here, we should think in terms of the different stages of attainment along the way. First, one goes through the path of accumulation, accumulating mainly merit. Secondly, one goes through the path of application, accumulating mainly wisdom. That culminates in the path of vision, and that leads into the path of meditation, where one then traverses the bodhisattva bhumis. And that finally ends in attaining the path of complete perfection of Buddhahood, the path of no more learning. And if each stage of that did not comprise a degree of transformation, then there would be no basis for talking about a progression. Just as if there were no sprout, if there were no transformation occurring between the seed and the sprout, then there would be no way of talking about the sprout. The sprout is itself a transformation of the seed, and the stalk is a transformation of the sprout. So to talk about a gradual progression is a way of talking about a gradual transformation. So without the transformation, there would be no varying levels of degree of realization along the way. Just as without a transformation of the seed, there would be no sprout. Then, if there were no transformation, there would be no basis of imputation for speaking of a nirvanic individual. So what that means is, What is a nirvanic individual? An individual who has attained nirvana. That means someone who has been able to get beyond the skandhas. As long as a person, a mind stream, is manifesting in the form of the five skandhas, that is a samsaric individual. And becoming a nirvanic individual means that the skandhas are gone. When this is described in the Shravakayana, it's described as the attainment of enlightenment is described as an extinction. It's compared to blowing out the light of a candle, where the mind is then said to just rest in a state of pacification. The five skandhas and everything producing them is just gone. So one could raise the objection, could it not possibly be the case that attaining liberation is just a case of eliminating the skandhas like a seed burned in the fire? But what Mipham Rinpoche here points out is that in order to say that, you have to relate it to a mind stream. It doesn't make any sense to talk about attaining arhathood unless you relate that to a specific mind stream. And if you didn't relate it to a mind stream, there would be no way of knowing whether anything had been attained or not. In other words, if there is no individual attaining enlightenment, then how can you speak of enlightenment being attained in a conventional way of speaking? So one has to relate the attainment of enlightenment to a mind stream, and as soon as you do that, that means you're talking about a mind stream that has been changed from being a samsaric kind of a mind to being a nirvanic kind of a mind. It would be the case that all of the kleshas and the obscurations producing them would be gone, but it would, at the same time, they would be gone from a mind stream. So that is the equivalent of saying that mind stream has been transformed. Or another way of saying it, in a conventional sense, there is somebody who attained enlightenment. And if you don't describe enlightenment in terms of transformation, then you couldn't make that statement. And finally, now we're using this term enlightenment, the text distinguish between three types of enlightenment: the enlightenment attained by the Shravakas, the enlightenment of the Pratyeka Buddhas, and the enlightenment attained in Mahayana. And again, one needs to speak of these in terms of a transformation. Because the term because the differences in the different degrees of enlightenment are simply a difference in whether the obscurations that have been eliminated completely or only partially. Through arhathood, the obscurations of the kleshas, the klesha obscurations, are eliminated completely, but the cognitive obscurations are not. So one can distinguish between different degrees of elimination of the obscurations. And if one doesn't speak of this in terms of a transformation, then again, it would be there would be no reference point for speaking of those differences of degree of elimination of obscuration. The text compares that to talking about the qualities of the son of, or daughter of a barren woman. If a specific type of enlightenment is not a question of a specific degree of transformation of the mind stream, then that would mean you're not talking about anybody. You're just talking about qualities that don't have any container. It would be like talking about the qualities of a son or daughter that had never been born. So it's clear that it is necessary to describe this in terms of a transformation, and that doesn't create any contradictions in the way that enlightenment is posited. There's no contradiction between the Mahayana and the Shravakayana in the way enlightenment is posited, in the sense that the enlightenment attained in the Mahayana is still the attainment of an expanse which is completely free of any remainder of skandhas. It's just that in the way that it's posited in the Shravakayana, there's no way to return to samsara to work for the benefit of others, because enlightenment there is thought of as an extinction. So the enlightened mind there, the arhat, is simply, you might say, stuck in a state of pacification without being able to actively benefit others. But by seeing enlightenment as a transformation, it is possible to have eliminated the skandhas and yet re-manifest within samsara by the power of wishing prayers. It's only that one does not re-manifest in skandhas, but in an emanation body. So the essential point is the same for both. The skandhas are gone. It's just that in the one, it's said that the skandhas have been extinguished and that the mind stream is completely gone. And in the other, the mind stream has been transformed so that the skandhas are gone, but the mind stream is still there and is able to actively benefit others in the form of an emanation body that manifests in samsara. So it's clear that that's very lucky for us. That it's possible for the enlightened beings to come back and manifest in a form that we can see and hear and connect with, hear their teachings, and follow their example. So if there were no transformation, we would end up with the great disadvantage of having no enlightened teachers. So that completes the explanation of this. Now let's complete it by reciting the verse in
Ta don bhen jo wan don bhen jo wan namba yor hibraso.
Then the benefits of there being a transformation reads on page 199, the introduction to the benefits should be known to include these four, but in the reverse. So this is a very easy point, because the benefits of there being a transformation are just the reverse of the disadvantages that would apply if there were no transformation. So the disadvantage of the first was that there would be no support for the re-entry of the obscurations in the mind stream once they'd been eliminated. The advantage of the transformation is that there is a basis for there being no re-entry of the obscurations once they've been eliminated. So once they're gone, they stay gone. And that is ensured by that depends on which level of path one has arrived at. And that's the next point. The disadvantage of, if there were no transformation, there would be no basis for speaking of the path, which is the remedy entering the mind stream. And the advantage of there being a transformation is that there is a support for the remedy entering the mind stream, the remedy or the path getting into one's mind stream. And as one progresses through the different paths, one arrives at various peaks where the transformation has gotten to a point where one doesn't fall back below that point. so that, for example, on achieving the path of vision, one no longer will fall back into the level of an ordinary being. So that's the advantage of there being a transformation. One has become a different kind of being, so there's no longer any basis in one's mind stream for being a samsaric, ordinary individual with all the suffering and confusion that goes with it. And thirdly, the disadvantage of there being no basis for speaking of a nirvanic individual is reversed, and there is an advantage for speaking of a nirvanic individual, for saying there is somebody who has attained enlightenment. And the disadvantage of there being no difference between the different kinds of, or no basis for imputing the differences between different kinds of enlightenment is reversed, as such that there is a basis for such differences. So the third point here, and this goes all the way back to the beginning of the text, where it said there were three main points: the brief presentation, the main body of the text, and the concluding summary. This is the third of those points. The concluding summary, using examples to illustrate the point. In the root text, this is described as to show how phenomena not existing appear. So, it's important to have an example for a hypothesis that you lay down. And here, the proposition is that phenomena do not exist, but are mere appearances. So is there any example illustrating that? Do we have experience within our own lives of things that don't exist and yet appear? And yes, we do, of course. Every time we have a dream, we're experiencing something that's not there, but appearing. Every time we see a lady being cut in two on the stage by an illusionist, so you see her head coming out of one end of the box and her feet coming out of the other end of the box, and you see the illusionist's saw going down through the lady, down through the box that the lady is in, and then you see the head rolled off to one side and the feet rolled off to the other side. So you saw the lady being cut in two, but it didn't happen. It's just an appearance. And the same with mirages, where you see water on the road in front of you, but you never get to it. And I remember as a child having that problem, that I would see the water on the road in front and wonder why we never got to it. And I would say to the driver of the car, drive a little faster so we can get to the water. Because I thought there was water there. That's just another example of something that's not there, but clearly appears. It appears so clearly that many animals every summer get killed trying to get to the water, because they see it too. They crawl up onto the highway to get to the water and get run over. So that's a good, clear example of something not existing that appears so convincingly that we believe it exists. And the same is true of all of the other examples that Rinpoche has given us based on the sutras. The example of optical illusions of water moons, the reflection of the moon in the water, where you can see the water down there in the pond, but it's not there. The example of miraculous manifestations of reflections. You see your face in the mirror, but it's not in the mirror. And also space. You look out into what you call space in front of you and think you're seeing space, but what you're seeing is a color. And space is not there because space is a non-composite thing. It's not created by cause and conditions. So it doesn't have any shape, it doesn't have any color in itself, and so on. It's a non-thing. And so it's a non-thing, and yet there is an appearance that you give a name. So these are many examples of things that are not there, but they are seen, and in many cases they are seen collectively by whole groups, whole types of being, collections of types of being, like all humans see space and so on. So that's the example illustrating how phenomena not existing could appear. And to illustrate the total transformation, it is compared to space, to gold and water. So in space, clouds appear, but those clouds are not able to actually affect space itself. And the sign of that is that the clouds come and go. And the space actually stays the same, stays unaltered. Whether the clouds are there or not, one thing that can illustrate that for us is to think that the sun is still shining even though the clouds may be so thick that it seems dark, that you can't see the sun, and yet it is there. And in the same way, space is still there, even though it's covered over by clouds. But the essence of space, the essence of space is completely unaffected by there being clouds and not being clouds. The example of water is one where we need to think of the draught, we would call it the slime in the water. When water is stirred up, it looks muddy. If the water remains unstirred, then the mud settles to the bottom. But in both cases, the water was the same. The essence of the water, the component of water itself, is unchanged whether it's muddy or clear. And finally, gold. The point there is that one considers gold ore, and when you have gold ore, you have a substance that's mixed with elements that are not gold. But if you subject the gold ore to a process of refinement, then you can remove everything which was not the gold from the ore, and what will be left is the pure gold. So you can transform the gold ore into pure gold, even though the gold itself has not changed. In the same way that you can transform the water into the water can be transformed into clear water, even though the water itself has not changed. It's only the mud that is settled. And the sky, which was before clouded, can be transformed into clear sky, even though the sky itself has undergone no change between the two stages. So that's the way the total transformation is illustrated by comparing it to space, water, and gold.
Maybe chuna namepe dema mala soba neyo jorba pesen nanga se dan chuso maybe chuna namepe dema mala soba neyo jorba
Joy, my.
Recited in English three times.
Ta tumbung nanda parudu semba chogli jagri.
Now we will connect stupidity's perfect purity with the six paramitas perfect.
Tomo number dabe jemba ba do jemba number dab jemba baru do jemba number dabe tomo number taba de dana tomo number dab jemba baru do jemba number daba nizo mede nizo zarm sozo mai tamede do.
Transcendent generosity is perfectly pure, and therefore transcendent generosity is perfectly pure. Transcendent generosity is perfectly pure, and therefore stupidity is perfectly pure. Thus, stupidity perfectly pure, and transcendent generosity perfectly pure. I am not dual, cannot be made dual, I am not separate, and I am not different.
Tumo number dabe, Totemje Borodo Zumba number, Totemje Borodo Zumba number, Tumo number daba de, Tedana, Tumo number daba, Totemje Borodo Zumba number daba, Niza Mede, Niza Zan, Sozo my family do. Tomo number dabe, zube baru do zimba, number zube baru do zimba, number tomo number dabo, te, edana tomo number dabo, zube baru do zimba, number dabo, nizo mede, nizo zan, sozo maye da mede do.
Stupidity is perfectly pure, and therefore transcendent patience is perfectly pure. Transcendent patience is perfectly pure, and therefore stupidity is perfectly pure. Thus, stupidity perfectly pure, and transcendent patience perfectly pure. I am not dual, cannot be made dual, I am not separate, and I am not
Tomo number dabe, dundu je barudos, number daba, dundu je barudos, number dabe, tomo number, dundu je barudos, number dab, te, te dana, tomo number daba, dundu je barudos, number daba, del, nizo mede, nizo zan, sozo mae dame dedo.
Transcendent joyous diligence.
Stupidity is perfectly pure, and therefore transcendent joyous diligence is perfectly pure. Transcendent joyous diligence is perfectly pure, and therefore stupidity is perfectly pure. Thus, stupidity perfectly pure, and transcendent joyous diligence perfectly pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not.
Tomo number dabe, something de barudo zimba, number something de barudo zimba, number Tomo number daba de, tetana number daba da, something de barudo zimba, number de la nisa mede, nisa sam, suzo maya da mede do.
Stupidity is perfectly pure, and therefore transcendent concentration is perfectly pure. Transcendent concentration is perfectly pure, and therefore stupidity is perfectly pure. Thus, stupidity perfectly pure, and transcendent concentration perfectly pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different.
Tomo number dabe, shiraja barod, simba number daba, shiraja barod, number dabe, tomo number daba, te dana, tomo number daba, shiraja barod, simba number daba, dela, nisa mit, nisa sarmi, sozo ma, tame de do.
Stupidity is perfectly pure, and therefore transcendent wisdom is perfectly pure. Transcendent wisdom is perfectly pure, and therefore stupidity is perfectly pure. Thus, stupidity perfectly pure, and transcendent wisdom perfectly pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different.
Tonya Chordia Konzo, Ming, Umayua. Yata Tony Jobje Lajal, Techeranzo Injike Kazan Janendo. Injike Kazan.
We should now connect stupidity's perfect purity with the 18 emptinesses' perfect purity. We wrote down this list a couple days ago.
Pure, and therefore the emptiness of the inner is perfectly pure.
Yeah, that's it. So, then, Tomonanda, Tomonanda, Dega, Docha, Heda, Tomonanda, Degan, then, Holy Alenge, Hina, Senda, Trabukta, Jamchun, Randa, Kasakalaya, Don, then, Mama Yinda, Deda, Mama Yinda, Tunduda, Chate, the Redatusula, then, Chuhe Gudo, Chuhe Bokas, Ranto, and Basangelo, come, Chuhe.
Now you have completed the recitation of these verses. And anger's perfect purity and stupidity's perfect purity. Now what we should do is go out in the holy islands, go to the beaches, go to the forests, go to the rock caves, go to the hills, and teach these verses to the non-humans, to the non-human animals, to the non-human spirits, the birds, the mountain goats, the mountain sheep, and horses.
To
the bugs and to the non-human spirits, you should imagine that they all are listening to you intently. And you should visualize yourself as our teacher, the Buddha Shakyamuni, and teach these verses to these sentient beings. You should go, if you want to go by yourself, that's fine. You can go in groups of two or four or more, however many together. But you should go and do this now. You have to be back by 6 o'clock for dinner. Between now and 6 o'clock, this is what you should do. In the language of gods, language of humans, language of Varas and Rakshas, and all the different languages there are,
tene mama yin dan de dan de zo tam de am jo ma tung ni do sang go ni be me ba ko
imagine all of the non-humans, the demons and everyone else are just listening to you one
pointed and tondo to tung
the animals are listening to you one with one pointed concentration
tene tondo re ye ta ra da re ye lok da tene dan da cho za na zo da za san ji me che be do wa
You have no shortage of an audience. There are cows and goats and horses and water birds. There's an inconceivable number of sentient beings out there. And you can go wherever you want. It's up to you.
Then
you want to go to a cave? There are caves.
Then I put a cat down here for that.
Make your tongues more dexterous.
Yeah. Okay.